Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important, to the fastest growing, and for the most part, the largest segment of society. To those of you who know that the world's political and religious, as well as economic and media institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Unfortunately, the majority of you still do not know that the military is among those institutions which are bankrupt, indeed counterproductive. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is 877-300-7645. Last week, over a two-day period, I told the story of an ISIS recruiting film. ISIS is the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. It is now just the Islamic State. But back when, before it announced its caliphate and became the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, just now the Islamic State and that region, it had a number of recruiting films, and one of those recruiting films was featured a Canadian. And the Canadian was talking about how glorious it was to fight in jihad. And in the midst of the video, it shows this Canadian who had moved to Syria to engage in the great jihad, being killed in a battle, and close-ups of his body riddled with bullets. And the claim was, you too, Muslim, can die and become a martyr, become a great hero for the cause. And, you know, I was exposing how only in Islam would a recruitment film selling death be considered enticing. But over this weekend, I listened closely to a commercial that has aired a number of times. It's produced by the U.S. Army, and it's exactly the same story. It doesn't show the recruiter dead, but it does everything but. It's the Gold Star promotion that's run by the U.S. Army, telling everyone who listens that they need to salute the Army. They need to show their undying gratitude for those who have served and those who have given their lives, and that the parents of a dead warrior should wear their gold stars with honor, and that any time you see one of those, you have a duty as an American to show your utter support and respect, your devotion to their great sacrifice. It's exactly the same cause. Americans are trying to recruit for the Army, thinking that, you know, if you die, you're going to make your parents heroes. You'll become a hero. It's exactly the same mindset. Now, the fact that that is appealing and is being run as a commercial by the U.S. Army says, you know, the U.S. Army is really no different than the Islamic State in this regard. This was a painful weekend for me. On Saturday, I was having lunch at one of my favorite local restaurants. My son picked up the phone and called me, had a question. And anytime he picks up the phone and calls, I always find it interesting to engage in conversation. We talked for about 30 minutes. Now, I don't normally like to talk on a cell phone in a restaurant. But my son doesn't call all that often. And when he does, I want to share as much as we can. So we began talking about the world. And we talked about the because he had an incident with the police, witnessed one, wasn't involved himself, that was very similar to the abusiveness that the police officer under camera perpetrated against a woman in Tucson who was a professor, an African-American woman, beautifully dressed, extraordinarily articulate. And the policeman essentially accosted her. And we talked about the number of cases in America where the police have become belligerent. And we talked about the Ukrainian situation, which we'll get into in the second hour of our program, and how the United States is blaming Russia for a war that we inspired. And we talked about the failure in Iraq, and how America is arming both sides. And there was a man that was with his child and parents, a skinhead type individual, not actually skinhead, but closely shaven, looked like he was a member of the military in the way that his hair was cut, just having a conniption fit as we were talking about these things. He came over and just stared at me, pointed his finger, and started yapping and because I was talking with my son in a noisy restaurant. I'm not sure I made out much of what he said, but he was really angry that I would dare say that at this point Putin was more trustworthy than Obama. That's, of course, true. And, you know, we continued to talk about how disingenuous the commander-in-chief is of the United States. I was undaunted by the man. Yeah, he was probably 6'4". And I'm not that tall. And he was half my age, if even that. And he just continued to get angry and angrier and tried to stare me down as I left the restaurant. I just kept on talking. But folks, you know, we finally reached the point where, according to Gallup, 55% of you know that Christianity is untrustworthy. That's encouraging. 55%. And about 90% of you know that the U.S. Congress is not trustworthy. About 80% of you know that the office of the president is not trustworthy. About 75% of you know that your judicial system isn't just, and that your police force isn't trustworthy. And it goes on and on. There's only one bastion of credibility in people's minds left, where the majority of people still think that the institution has merit. And while it has none, the perception that it has merit is deeply troubling. That's the U.S. military. It got something in the range of a 70% approval rating by the Americans who were polled by Gallup. And that's in spite of the fact that it has been deployed, making bad situations worse for a very long time. That it routinely lies, that given the opportunity to tell the truth or a lie, even if the truth sounded better, they'd go with the lie. This is an extraordinarily counterproductive institution. If we followed Jefferson's advice, we wouldn't have a military, and we'd be eminently safer. And we've gone through that as to why it would be impossible for anyone to invade America if we just honored the Second Amendment. And we've talked about why Jefferson was so opposed to a military and how all of his fears have materialized. We've also discussed on this program how the U.S. military has never fought to defend American freedom, a myth that is constantly promoted that says we should be grateful for them for doing so. But I'm telling you, because of the way that America has become the merchant of death, supplying most of the weapons that are being used around the world to massacre tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of people, and how we're on the wrong side of every conflict, and how our military now is not only the largest in the world, but between our military and our spying apparatus, at $1 trillion, we spend more in these areas than the rest of the world combined. That has become a real serious problem. And if you are in support of the U.S. military, you're aiding and abetting world war, death, carnage, savagery. Now, you might, if you're a casual listener to this program, chafe at my constant criticisms of the U.S. military. And you may say, you know, if you don't love America, just leave it. We need to be real careful with that. before you say such a thing, you need to read in Hebrew, Isaiah 18. And if you want to read it translated from Hebrew into English, you can go to yadaya.com. The Last Days is the seventh volume. It is the last chapter of the seventh volume. It's published at yadaya.com for your consideration. If you want to criticize me for saying that America has become hypocritical, arrogant, belligerent, condescending, a force for evil in the world, a menace to the world, then you're going to need to also condemn God for having exactly the same point of view. Those are his words. These are indeed terrible times. In Nigeria, we have many hundreds of little girls that have been kidnapped and that are being raped 10 to 15 times every day. And the world doesn't even want to focus on it anymore. Oh, there's too many calamities to focus on. The tens of thousands who have been murdered by the fundamentalist Islamic group Boko Haram and who have been taken from their homes, and those who have been kidnapped and are raped multiple times every day. We can't be bothered with that. You know, there's more girls who have been kidnapped and raped by Boko Haram than died in this plane crash, and one was a accident, the other is deliberate. One has no political or religious motivation, and the other is purely political and religious. We don't want to talk about Libya. It barely makes the news, and yet the country is embroiled in civil war. The country, America, equipped with weapons to overturn the Gaddafi regime, the very thing that we did by in the billions of dollars worth of weaponry, the thing that we're accusing Russia of doing in the Donetsk region, America actually did in Libya to the tune of billions of dollars. They overturned the government of that country, and now they're embroiled in a civil war between terrorist groups, and yet no one wants to speak of it. The airport is shut down. Tens of people, sometimes as many as 30, 40, 50, are dying every day. We'll be back in a moment. These are indeed terrible times, moving beyond Nigeria and Libya, where the United States armed the opposition, doing the very things in the billions of dollars that brought down a legitimate government, the very thing that we're accusing Russia of doing in Ukraine. You move on to Syria, where the United States once again armed the opposition to oppose a legitimate government. You may not like Assad. I don't like Assad. But the forces America is arming, and they're not forces, they're mujahideen, they're jihadists, that are opposing him are vastly more ruthless, vastly more savage than the ethnic Russians in Donetsk. And look what happened. We gave billions of dollars worth of weapons to people we lied and said were freedom fighters. And they used those weapons then not only to destabilize Syria, but also in Iraq. Now, in Iraq, we have suicide bombings, wrecking carnage on that country. In fact, it hardly even makes the top of the news anymore. But, you know, a score of people died yesterday in suicide bombings. Christians in Mosul have been essentially annihilated. We'll tell that story here before long. The Islamic State has announced its a Sharia-compliant caliphate, an emirate. Hezbollah is now engaged in Iraq on the side of the Shia government that America imposed. The U.S. Army, the Army, the U.S. weaponized, is continuing to surrender and thereby giving American weapons to the Islamic State. Of course, the world is at war in Gaza, where the Muslims are claiming to be victims and at the same time claiming to be the victimizers. They don't seem to see the hypocrisy, nor does the world, in their claims. You look at Iran and the tentative agreement with the Iranians that released all of their assets for an agreement to negotiate towards a comprehensive declaration on disarming their nuclear ambitions has failed. And so we've just pushed the ball down the road another 4 months, but it was a catastrophic failure. And Afghanistan, the country that we broke, the last elections are contested to the point that no one has a clue who won, and it doesn't matter, because the moment we withdraw, the Taliban, which already controls most of the country, will control all of the country. Then we look at the Ukraine, where America started a war and now is blaming the Russians for a war that America has aided and abetted. We don't even want to hear about Snowden anymore, although he had an announcement today about the nature of the character, the morality of the NSA, and stated routinely that very young men are employed by the NSA, 18 to 22 years old. And when the NSA gets pictures of people's private use of their own yards, and they have an attractive satellite photo of a woman who is naked, they will not only giggle about it, but pass it on and share it with all of their colleagues. And all the while, the United States is bankrupt. These are terrible times. The lead story really in the news today is what's happening in Gaza. President Obama, in a phone call with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, raised serious concerns about the growing number of casualties. Now, why isn't the president raising serious concerns about the growing number of casualties when the Kiev government that he is aiding and abetting herded 100 people into a building and then burned them alive? Why didn't he speak out when in Afghanistan, a suicide bomber just killed a score of people? Or in Iraq, where a suicide bomber has killed a score of people, deliberately trying to kill innocent civilians? Why didn't he speak out? Why is Israel being told that they should be concerned about the growing number of casualties when they are defending themselves, when they are responding to rocket attacks, when they are responding to Muslims trying to kidnap their people? Why is it that the United States would warn Israel when we went into Iraq and left a death toll close to 1 million? You know, somehow I must have missed it when Netanyahu called George Bush and said, you know, George, we're really concerned about the growing number of casualties in Iraq. You know, it's almost 1 million people have been killed since your invasion. We're very concerned about this, George. You need to rein it in. Maybe we should call a ceasefire, George. I mean, I don't recall an Israeli official calling Lyndon Johnson or Richard Nixon saying, hey, Lyndon, Richard, you know, the death toll in Vietnam, I mean, it's in the millions now that have died since your invasion of that country. We're really concerned on the number of casualties, particularly civilian casualties. Maybe it's time that we negotiated a truce, Richard, Lyndon. And can you imagine having Israel call FDR and say, you know, Franklin, I mean, the way that you're perpetrating this war and firebombing cities like Dresden, the way that you are killing 50,000 Japanese women and children a night with your white phosphorus bombing of their cities. Way too much civilian casualty, Franklin. You really need to tone it down. We're concerned. And yet Israel goes way beyond any country, not only today in the history of the world. There has never been a situation ever where a country has called and sent text messages, has gone to elaborate means to warn civilians that there is a military significance to the area where you are living and a threat to us, and we're going to take it out, but we just assume not kill you. If you want to live, leave. Israel typically will do what's called a knock on the roof, where they'll drop a dummy bomb on the roof of a building to get the residents' attention that you've got, 10 or 15 minutes to get the hell out of Dodge, or the building's going to come down. But the fact is, and it's irrefutable, that Muslims use their civilian population to protect their military assets. And they don't want the people to leave, particularly women and children. They're delighted when they die. Oh, they'll have their enraged funerals, and they'll curse at Israel. But that's the only reason that they attend those funerals. They don't give a crap. Life means nothing to them. They live to die. Islam has made them that way. And so here's a country going to greater extent to warn the civilian population than any country in human history. Do you think that we made announcements in Nagasaki and Hiroshima that we were going to drop the bomb and told the civilians to leave? There wasn't a military target, by the way, in either of those two cities. Neither of those two cities had sent rockets into America. I mean, there's no... Every parallel of what Israel is doing is vastly superior to what America did. Everyone. And yet we tell the Israelis that you can't defend yourself. No, we want a truce. Let those Muslim rockets, let those Muslim tunnels, let those bomb-making facilities, you just let them remain. You continue to have your people vulnerable because that's the way we want it. All the while, Secretary of State John Lurch Kerry is announcing that he's flying to Cairo on Monday seeking international help to broker a ceasefire. Can you imagine? The United States is going to Cairo to negotiate a ceasefire. I mean, beyond the fact that it's grotesquely immoral, Cairo. You had the first legitimate election in the country's history, and three-quarters of the people vote for the most fundamentalist Islamic parties and empower the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood bankrupts the country in short order. There's a military coup. The military coup then bans not only the Muslim Brotherhood, but any opposing political party. And hunts any opposing political person down, but has mock trials and then condemns them to death. This is a military junta that has allowed open hunting season on Christians, where little Christian girls are kidnapped every day and raped by Muslims, and where virtually every Christian Copt church in Egypt has been burned down and destroyed. All while the junta does nothing. And Kerry is going there to solicit a ceasefire in Israel? Talk about grotesquely immoral. Giving the Cairo government credence under these circumstances, we're also reaching out to Turkey. I mean, look at Erdogan. Erdogan has become a complete laughingstock internationally. He's involved in all sorts of graft. He's involved in all sorts of witch hunts, hunting down and killing his opponents. He's taken that country away from a a sectarian basis or a secular basis to wholly religious, fundamentalist Islamic. And then the United States is running to Qatar, where the UN chief Moon is today, which is the primary gunrunner for the Libyan conflict, primary gunrunner for the Syrian conflict, and therefore the Iraqi conflict. These are the places that America is going to negotiate a settlement in Gaza. And by the way, Gaza has become a thorn, a deadly thorn, a vicious viper, only because the United States forced Israel to leave. And since Israel has left, it has become a maze of underground bomb-making facilities, rocket assembly facilities, rocket launch facilities, and tunnels to invade Israel and kidnap its people. That's the consequence of America's insistence that Israel leave Gaza. And now America is going all over the world seeking international help to broker a ceasefire. Why? We brokered a ceasefire the last time, and Hamas violated it. The ceasefire said Hamas would fire no more rockets. They continued to fire rockets. Israel responded to the rockets. Why would you negotiate a ceasefire, knowing that one side has never honored it and will never honor it? As the UN Security Council gathered on Sunday night in an emergency meeting requested by Council Member Jordan, they're an unbiased player here, Secretary General Ban Ki-moon called Israel's Shakhtia operation an atrocious action. You piece of crap. An atrocious action. Why did they go into the town? Because a disproportionate number of rockets being fired into Israel came from that town. That's why they went there. So if you want to talk about an atrocious action, it's the Muslims living there firing rockets from that community. And when Israel arrived and wanted to destroy A, the tunnels, and B, the rockets, what did they find? They found Hamas armed to the teeth, anti-tank weapons. They found them with 50 caliber machine guns. They found them with missiles. They found them having their own city booby-trapped. They went into the town thinking that they could just mitigate the rocket launchers and the tunnels. And rather than finding a community saying, oh, sure, you know, why not? I mean, take the rockets away, just leave us in peace. No, the entire town turned out to be a killing machine. Nearly a dozen Israelis were killed in the crossfire, trying to defend themselves. And this piece of human excrement that heads one of the worst organizations in the world, one of the most hypocritical organizations in the world, calls the Israeli operation atrocious. And then demanded that Israel must exercise maximum restraint to do far more to protect civilians. I mean, why is the world so stupid? Yeah, in Hamas, there is no army. In Hamas, in Gaza, there is no uniforms. If they're wearing uniforms, they're wearing Israeli uniforms to infiltrate inside of the Israeli defense forces so they can kidnap Israelis. They don't wear uniforms. There are there's no non-civilian distinction here. You know, this myth that 80% of those killed have been civilians. They're all civilians. What is a Muslim boy? He's a suicide bomber in waiting. What is a Muslim woman? She's a suicide bomb manufacturing facility. Yes, the children, you'd say, well, what about the children that have been killed? Those children from age 2 are indoctrinated to hate Jews. They're told that the only honorable solution is to learn to kill Jews. He then said, everyone needs to respect international law. Of course, he spoke in Qatar, which is anti-Israel, the primary gunrunners of the world. The merchants of death in the Islamic world, and Bonn didn't condemn Qatar. Qatar, of course, is the primary supplier of the weapons that were deployed against the Israelis in this particular fight. But he didn't condemn them for supplying the weapons. He traveled to the region, which he called a journey of solidarity and peace. Well, solidarity with whom? He's obviously not, doesn't want to have any solidarity with Israel. Solidarity between the UN and the Muslim world. A journey of solidarity. Yes, indeed. The UN is solidly in the Muslim camp. He was also there promoting a two-state solution, which is exactly what the Muslim world wants. The moment it is established, we will be in World War III. Thank you very much, Mr. Moon. Hamas militants have been far more vicious than the Israelis anticipated. They are now well-trained, and they are very well-equipped. And we have to wonder how they have been. I'm not wondering, but the world should be questioning, how is it that they're very well-equipped? And with sophisticated weapon systems. They're not only firing AK-47s, but they have heavy weapons, including mortars, including rocket-propelled grenades, including missiles, including anti-tank rounds. They're using the same kind of weapons that we see in Syria. Now, we know who supplies the weapons in Syria, Saudi Arabia and Qatar. You know, Egypt doesn't want Hamas to be weaponized. And the reason is because they're as concerned about Hamas as the Israelis are. And the reason for that is that the military junta now ruling Egypt is at war with the Muslim Brotherhood, and Hamas is a derivative of the Muslim Brotherhood. So they're not coming from Egypt. That means they're coming, well, some rockets have come from Iran. But right now, Hamas has spoken out against Iran, and they have for the last year, because of the civil war and the proxy war in Syria, which is Shia Sunni, with Hamas being Sunni and Iran supporting the Shias. Hamas has spoken out against Iran, which would limit the number of Iranian rockets and Iranian weapons. So now you have to deal with who is supplying the weapons. Well, the primary gunrunner for Muslim Mujahideen overwhelmingly is Qatar, the very place where the United Nations chief, Mr. Moon, is speaking out against Israel. They were the gunrunners for Libya. They're the gunrunners for Syria. They're the gunrunners for Boko Haram in Nigeria. And now, obviously, they're the gunrunners, the armament suppliers for Hamas. Now, if you're ever thinking about flying in airlines, ever thinking about going on a vacation, and you think that it might be good to go to Qatar, if you think that it's a good thing that America has its Navy base in Qatar, the fact that the United States is going to go to Qatar to negotiate a settlement in the Hamas war, you need to have your head examined. So they are now much better equipped with heavy weapons. And the armed forces had Israel saying, you know, our armed forces have no intention of reoccupying Gaza, which it pulled out of in 2005 at the direction of the United States. He said that the objective of the ground offensive hasn't changed. It's to destroy the tunnel network and the rocket launchers that Hamas militants have used to attack Israel. We've expanded the forces on the ground in order to accomplish that mission. Now, those are worthy missions. And if Israel doesn't accomplish that mission, then the whole thing will be for naught. They will continue to be harassed, to be terrorized. all of Gaza is an underground city. And the amount of infrastructure Hamas has built over the years since 2005 is immense. There are tunnels, extended bunkers, weapon storage facilities, all underneath urban areas. All while the people themselves and their regime are bankrupt. Yes, what Hamas did with all of the charity that it received from the West and from the Islamic world is it spent it all preparing to destroy Israel, all the while starving its own people. The Israeli military said that Shigaya had been targeted because of a significant percentage of rockets fired by Hamas and other militant groups like Islamic Jihad into Israel had come from the town. Jerusalem, Dateline, another story, same subject, same part of the world. Hamas militants intensified their attacks on Israeli forces Saturday, killing soldiers on Israeli soil and attacking others with anti-tank missiles, 50 caliber machine guns, even an explosive-laden donkey. As the conflict stretched into its 12th day, the Hamas militants and their resistance seem to have upended a narrative provided by Israel of Hamas severely weakened by Israeli ground offensive and airstrikes. That's not true. Israelis never made that statement. We should be ashamed that we are allowing ignoramuses to write for such newspapers.